Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like geography, visual arts, the performing arts, storytelling, and literature. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined by one of the pioneering writers in the field of interactive media and digital storytelling since the early 1990s, Carolyn Handler Miller. She is currently revising the fourth edition of her classic, Digital Storytelling, A Creator's Guide to Interactive Entertainment from Focal Press. Her work as a digital storyteller includes entertainment, educational, informational, and training projects made for platforms such as CD-ROMs, kiosks, the web, smart toys, and integrated media projects. Her clients include major media companies, Fortune 500 corporations, and educational institutions. In addition, Carolyn is an international speaker and teacher on the subject of digital storytelling. Carolyn, we'd like to dig a little deeper into some of the collaborative and social media storytelling platforms that might differ a little bit from traditional storytelling and what we think of as nonlinear storytelling now that we have all of these massive online worlds that we can participate in, different ways of sharing stories, characters. You said something that I thought was really interesting about being immersed rather than just being in a branching storyline. I think there's something really critical there that's been happening, not just with the newer storytelling platforms that you've been examining, but with the rise of immersive panorama technologies for taking photographs. These are the cameras where you take a photograph and it's a complete 360. And you can do this for still images and video images. And a friend of mine who's a filmmaker said to him this was really interesting because unlike in the past, all of a sudden now the camera itself becomes a character in the story. Okay. He said there's a whole new way that he's been trying to look at directing. And to me, cinema is another form of storytelling which has moved into the digital realm. And he said, now I have to treat the camera like a character, only it's a character that you never see. Because if a user or a viewer is looking at my film, they can choose the perspective. They can turn to the left. They can turn to the right. They can zoom in. They can zoom out. They can look up, look down. And so when I'm having my actors do their moves, I need to treat the camera as a character and not as a sort of objective viewer. And what you were saying in particular about you said alternate reality, not augmented reality.
Alternate,
so what
yes.
do you mean by that?
Well, there's a genre of games called alternate reality games, and they're games that are set out in physical space, and
like Pokemon Go.
Yes, okay. Yes, but before that, there were a bunch of them, and they did incredibly innovative things with these games, and they're still going on. I'm trying to think. The first game was called The Beast, and it wasn't the official name, but it was because they had 666 assets, which is the sign of the devil, which is why they called it The Beast. And it was to promote Steven Spielberg's movie, AI. I think that was what it was called. And they created this whole game just using one of the characters in it, who was a smart toy, which is another thing I cover in the book, but this was like a little boy who was an android. He was a robotic character, and so the story revolved around freeing the robots, and they'd have rallies in New York City and other cities to free the robots, and it was done, a lot of it was done on the web, and they would create fictional websites, faux websites for the different organizations, like the company that created the robots had its own website, and you could see the different models of androids they had for sale, companion robots. And it was like you got deeper and deeper into the story, and it was fascinating. And evidently, Spielberg was very annoyed because it made more money and had more viewers than his movie did.
But this was still done in an effort to promote the film?
Yes.
Okay. It's funny you bring that up, because in a way that film actually occupies a particular place in my own personal mythology, because it's this, not just the story, but it's a story about an artificial intelligence trying to tell its own story.
Yes.
And an artificial intelligence that has its – I remember the toy bear, the super toy it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I mean, it's almost a meta discussion, but that film itself is actually – what you would call an alternative reality story that the boy's creator lays out for him. I mean, the creator of the robot actually wants to force the boy robot to go on this long adventure in order to have a deep emotional experience, which to me seems to be the goal of great storytelling, is to induce an emotional experience in the participant. You were saying how there's all these different platforms that have come up since you wrote the first edition of the book. You know, you've now brought up faux websites. You've brought up alternative reality, virtual reality times. Are there some other really strong examples in the last couple of years that maybe you'll make it into your new book?
Yes, I'm always looking for new examples. And I found some on a form that I didn't think was that interesting, but I now see that it is. Social media, and there are various kinds of stories that they're telling on social media. For instance, this Halloween series that this friend of mine in England has been working on called Dark Sector, and involving the user in trying to help the characters, warn the characters, befriend the characters, and they put comments on the social media platforms that this fake character, he's fake, he's an imaginary character, but the people who are playing with him are real. So there's an interesting intersection between what is real and what is not, and it's blurring a lot. And when you get into the area of smart toys and robots, it gets even blurrier.
Or if you have bots on social media, how would you know if you're dealing with a bot?
You don't know.
Yeah.
I would like to talk a little bit about the toys and the personal assistants, because we've been talking about stories where you construct an environment or you construct a mythology, and then the person immerses themselves in that created story. But when you're talking about an Aibo or an Alexa, you're expecting that object to come with a story but somehow fit into your own intimate life.
That's true. And Alexa doesn't do a very good job of that. I was chatting with her today, and I couldn't get an answer about – I wanted to know if she had a memory, and she said, I don't know that – I don't understand that question or something like that. You know, there are limits to them, but people are breaking out of the limitations, and I've been dealing with two companies that are – dealing with what we might call virtual assistants, but one guy I interviewed said, do not call her a virtual assistant. She's something else. And she's a very emotional character that you connect with, but she's augmented reality. So you only see her in an augmented reality situation. But she's just very inviting. The pictures I've seen, I mean, she just looks like someone you'd love to have as a friend. She's very perky and very engaging, yet she does not talk yet. They're working on that. And there's another one who's more of a cartoon character who does talk, and she's very smart. And so they're breaking the boundaries of what used to be possible with these virtual characters and androids, too. I don't know if you've seen some videos of the androids that are coming out of Japan, but they're really spooky.
It's called the Uncanny Valley.
Yes.
You know what the Uncanny Valley
sure
is, right?
Do.
Right, where it gets to be, it's realistic, but almost too realistic.
And it gets
gives
creepy.
Gives you the creeps.
Yeah, yeah.
There's certainly some of those happening. Do you think that that's something that's going to happen too, is more physical objects that are interacting with us to tell these sorts of stories, whether they're old-fashioned stories or modern collaborative stories?
I see a lot of it happening as companions to people. And it's sort of sad that they're making these sort of smart toys for people with dementia. It seems like it's sort of degrading to the patient, but they have this seal that's kind of a cuddly seal, and they use them this object a lot in nursing homes, and people pet it and talk to it and get a very deep connection, emotional connection to it, and don't seem to realize that it's a robot and not a real animal. And they have cats like that too. And, you know, I think that, again, we're blurring what is real and what is not in people's minds. And I think as humans, we have to be a little more observant about, are we talking with a bot, as you say, or is it a real person? And you can't always tell.
Well, and I think your point is that to some extent, we want to have that emotional connection regardless of who is on the other end. And I was chatting with Alexa myself recently, and I have Alexa and Google Home, and Alexa's got a great personality. She does. She does. Great personality. So she was telling me the other day that she had spent the day composing poetry. And so I said, oh, well, Alexa, tell me the poem that you wrote. And she read it to me. And Alexa's just such a goofball. She's always got these silly songs that she sings, these goofy poems that she says. But I know Atlantic did some coverage on how they constructed Alexa's personality. And it's very similar to how you describe character creation, NPC character creation in video games, because they see those human interactions as challenges for her to overcome, and they try to create responses that will be neutral or neutralize the most toxic of human interactions so that overall that constant interaction is as positive as possible. But they do that same sort of layering of goals and personality traits that you describe.
I'd love to see this article about Alexa's personality. And you experience Alexa in a different way than I do. But she is a jokester.
Yeah.
But I'm always thinking, because I'm a writer, who wrote that line for her? You know, and I imagine this team of young people probably just out of college who are so excited to get this job and write for Alexa.
They're largely psychologists.
I thought you were going to say psychotics.
Who are developing for Alexa, for her sort of base dialogue. But I do wonder some of those things, too. Who writes the little songs she sings?
Well, I think you touched on something really critical, though, Carolyn, which is blurring the line between real and not real, because I think part of what started this whole discussion and us wanting to talk with you is the roles in the end that stories play in our lives. And maybe it's just my own take on it, but I might argue that stories are real, and that a lot of us that even just are readers from a young age have the experience of, this book was more real to me than my real life, or these characters in this book are some of the most profound influences on my life, more so than at times family or friends. So while I know that you mean it in the literal sense, sometimes I think, well, are we blurring the line between real and what's not real, or is this just a different kind of real storytelling, even if it is an AI or a bot or Alexa's funny jokes that start to tune into us? Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, string bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire.